Lyle Pressler, punk rock legend and music industry vets. Jim Shear, most tenured VJ in the history of music television. Two men on one mission to talk about music. And it all starts now.
Hello there, everybody. My name is Jim Shear.
And I'm Lyle Pressler.
And welcome to the show. On today's episode, we will talk about The Roots dropping out of a pair of David Bowie tribute concerts because another band wouldn't let them use their equipment. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about Prince and his stance against YouTube. We are going to take a trip back to the 1990s. We'll talk about Salt and Peppa, Billy Corgan, and James Iha reuniting, Tom DeLonge unreuniting with Blink-182. We'll talk about Snoop Dogg going into the Wrestling Hall of Fame. We've got our music picks of the week. We'll talk about Lyle Pressler being a sensation on Instagram. But before we do all of that, the numbers are in. Kanye West's The Life of Pablo was streamed over 250 million times in its first 10 days. Now, speaking of going back to the 90s, let's go into a time machine right now. Present that number to a record label executive 20 years ago, and what does that even mean?
I don't think it means it doesn't mean anything. I mean, because the truth of the matter is, if someone could start streaming it, right? Stop, start again. It's sort of like page views.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, isn't it sort of like page views? It's sort of like, oh, I accidentally clicked on the Northrop Grumman ad that was on the Washington Post homepage.
I mean, couldn't you hit play and then leave the room?
You could do anything,
right?
But of course, you could. But of course, you could do that with an album too. I mean, you can do that with a CD,
right? Well, that's my question. What does it mean?
I think it means whatever the people who are in the streaming business want it to mean. I mean, didn't Tidal also say we've got 3 million subscribers?
Yeah, like.
Well, I mean, maybe they do. I don't know, but 3 million seems like a magic number that someone created.
To put things into perspective.
Okay.
In 1996, the top-selling album of the year was Jagged Little Pill from Alanis Morissette. And sold 7,380,000 copies.
Well, that's a lot.
But how many times did we actually listen to the album?
Yeah, well, yeah, and I mean, assuming that those numbers are real, because there still was monkey business going on.
Right.
But assuming they're real, yeah, I mean, so what does it mean? It means, I guess at the end of the day, none of this means anything until you have a concert at Madison Square Garden or Arrowhead Stadium or wherever it is you're doing it, and you see how many people buy tickets.
Hmm.
Yeah, and that gives you some sort of impression, not necessarily of how many people listen to your new song, but at least how many people want to fork over real money to go see you perform.
Because I wish there was some type of formula where they said, yes, it was streamed 250 million times, and that equates into selling 4 million albums.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you... Yeah, I agree. It would be great, but I don't know that you can do that. I also think that there's a serious disconnect between the notion of streaming or partially streaming or leaving the room or whatever it is you're doing and actually physically buying something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you physically buy something, you fork over the money. The person at the counter gives you a bag and you take the thing with you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a sale. We've had this conversation about sales before, what constitutes sales. And I don't know that there's any way to kind of work that out so you can equivocate those things in any kind of meaningful way. But of course, they're trying to.
Yeah.
Because that's how they're going to make money. And of course, the other thing about the streaming is too, it's like, so suppose I only really like one song and that's all I ever, I stream it 20 times, 30 times in a week.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, does that mean that it would have been the equivalent had I, would I have gone and bought his record, and then would I have simply said, I don't like the rest of the songs, I'm just going to play this one over and over and over again?
Yeah,
Maybe
that's what we did back in the day.
Sure.
You were stuck
with
a really bad album. Yeah,
whole sides.
I don't even remember the name of the band, but I think it was mid-90s, and I remember the album cover being orange, and they had one big hit on modern rock radio, and the rest of the album was terrible. And I think And maybe I'm just, because I've done this with an album before, I actually cut the tape and then I brought it back to the record store and I said, well, this is broken. I need my money back. So
it's warped. I can't play anything but this one song.
I've had bad albums before that I could live with, but this album was so bad that I had to cut it because I just didn't want it. I'm like, this is not worth it, man.
Yeah, exactly. Back when money meant something, yeah. Too.
So I don't know if you heard about this story. Tonight and tomorrow, there will be two David Bowie tribute concerts happening in New York City, respectively at Carnegie Hall and Radio City Music Hall. Mm-hmm. The Roots dropped off the bill yesterday, as well as Bilal and Kimbra, because it seems like another act didn't want to share their equipment, which sometimes needs to happen at an event like this with so many acts.
So, oh, yeah.
Questlove posted on Instagram, I've never been so insecure or petty as to deny a fellow musician any use of my equipment. It angers me when the same courtesy is not reciprocated. Mm-hmm. He ended the post by writing, hashtag bitchassness, enjoy your precious equipment.
Right, right.
Now,
well, I have a story about this that I think speaks to this. When Minor Threat was first starting out and we were starting to actually get some gigs, Black Flag came to town to play the 930 Club.
Mm-hmm.
And we were allowed to open for them, and I'd never met any of them. I only knew them from their crazy ferocious records, and you know, so this band just shows up and we show up for the sound check, and the problem was that I had an amplifier but I didn't have a speaker cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
And Ian says to me, well, go talk to those guys, they'll probably let you you use one.
Mm-hmm.
And I was terrified. I mean, I was terrified. I go up to Greg Ginn, who's like 6'7" or whatever, and I mean, only know him from reputation.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, Mr. Ginn, Mr. Ginn.
Did you call him Mr. Ginn?
I don't remember if I did or not, but I probably did. And I said, do you think there's any way I could use one of your cabs? He's like, yeah, no problem, of course. And thereafter, anybody who asked me, as long as, you know, it wasn't going to blow things up,
mm-hmm.
you sort of had to reciprocate. I agree with Questlove, 100%.
Yep.
I mean, I understand if it's a piece of equipment that's maybe exclusive to that artist, but that's not what they're looking
for.
They're basically looking for amplifiers and backline and maybe a drum set, something like that. Yeah.
Because
I think that's ridiculous.
The bill for these concerts is massive.
Yeah.
And just looking at the poster, you say to yourself, how are they going to fit all of that in?
So, oh, yeah.
The Roots were scheduled to perform both nights. Now, here are some other major acts playing. Now,
okay.
I'm not going to name the lesser-known acts,
mm-hmm.
because the Roots are higher on the food chain than they are. And these lower-named acts would obviously let the Roots play on their equipment.
Oh, well, they'd be honored. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, other acts on the bill, the Pixies, Michael Stipe, Perry Farrell, Cyndi Lauper, Ann Wilson of Heart.
Aha! Jacob, no.
Jacob Dylan, Cat Power, Robin Hitchcock, Blondie, The Flaming Lips, and Mumford & Sons. And I think there's also a band where Tony Visconti is playing in.
Okay.
And I think they're near the end of the Friday night show, so I don't even think that would be a problem. I don't think. So my question is, I wonder who it was.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And you wonder what piece of equipment it was.
Because,
you know, I mean, like, drummers can be extremely weird about letting other mm-hmm. people play their drums. And I know that's always a problem because everyone has a different kind of setup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like the cymbals a little bit over here. I like the hi-hat positioned here. I might like to detune the drums. You know, drummers kind of got kind of wiggy about that whole thing.
Now, if you had to pick one on that list, who would you pick?
Oh, I'd pick Mumford & Sons.
What?
No, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, and again, I can't imagine like what we're, I mean, it'd be great if we knew what we were talking about. Are we talking about like a Fairlight CMI synthesizer, or are we talking about, you know, a kick drum? I mean, again, I assume we're just talking about basic backline here, so I can't imagine there's an issue, but you know, that story just, it's sad. Now, well, it's also sad that it couldn't have been worked out somehow. I mean, come on.
So here's my take on it.
Yeah, let's hear
it. I like that it adds some sizzle to this David Bowie tribute concert. Because David Bowie always pushed buttons. So I think it's fitting that buttons have been pushed for his tribute concert. Now, yeah. Some people might say, "Ah, come on, The Roots. You can't do this at a David Bowie tribute concert." But it might not be The Roots. There right. might, because of this other band, it might be impossible for The Roots to play.
Right.
They said logistically it can't happen because this band isn't lending you their equipment.
Right, and there's no way to do a set change at that point.
And I know Questlove is just, he's a student of the game, he loves his music, and he wouldn't drop out of this concert unless he utterly needed to.
Absolutely, and also he's a guy who I'm sure, I mean, just knowing a little bit about how magnanimous he is about everything,
mm-hmm.
you know, he'd be the last person to withhold something, and I think he would, as a result, I think he'd be the first person to cry foul.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you might be right. I think they might. I mean, I refuse to believe that, like, this dude won't let me use his amplifier, so we're gonna quit. I don't think that's
no.
it. It's
got to
be
yeah.
something more important. It's got to be something more significant than that. And the set change thing is a huge problem. I remember doing, like, we did a showcase one time at CBGB's with Sub Pop bands.
Mm-hmm.
And every single one of them, and there were seven bands, and every single one of those bands insisted upon using their own equipment. And it was, and unfortunately, I ended up being, like, the stage manager because no one else knew how to, you know, had any knowledge of what to mm-hmm. do. And it was an absolute nightmare. I mean, it was to the point where I said, we're never doing this again, ever.
And that's why, yeah, I'm not really amped up about this tribute concert. I would rather have two or three acts that really love David Bowie and or that were close to David Bowie and have them do a tribute concert.
Yeah, you put so much pressure on it too, because if you're doing that many changes, inevitably someone's going to have a bad set because
mm-hmm.
the sound's going to be off or something's going to be wrong, and you're introducing so many bad variables into the process. But you know how it is. I mean, Jim, it's like they want as many stars as they can get.
Yeah.
It's got to be star-studded.
And fans will behave for a while because it's a tribute show, but at some point human nature will kick in. Because I remember... shortly after 9/11, the Beastie Boys put on a concert. I think it was called New Yorkers Against Violence.
Okay.
And there were seven or eight acts on the bill, and there was a curfew. It was at Hammerstein. And in my head, I'm thinking, come on, guys, because if you don't hurry up, the Beastie Boys aren't going to play a full set. And right before the Beastie Boys played, they had all of these Tibetan monks come on, and they were going to do 5 minutes of playing some type of music. And it took them literally 35 minutes to set up to do a 5-minute performance.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm not going to hear So What You Want tonight because you're taking so long setting up these monks.
Because
now,
the damn monks. Those damn singing monks.
So once again, it was this concert, you know, New Yorkers against violence. And all I'm thinking about is, come on, man. I want to hear the Beastie Boys. So
it became New Yorkers not getting to hear the Beastie Boys.
Yes. So, yeah. Human nature always kicks in a concert like this.
It does.
Prince doesn't like his music on YouTube.
Right.
He is notorious for keeping social media clean of any fan-made videos featuring his music, even if it's just 15 seconds on Instagram. So this week on Twitter, in tweets that were later deleted, he explained his stance to questioning fans. His tweets go like this. Since YouTube doesn't pay equitable licensing fees, isn't this a nonsensical question? Peace. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't your concerns be directed at YouTube and not here? World of Music is not only on YouTube. And he ended his series of tweets with a picture of Barney Fife sipping a fountain drink.
Okay.
The picture kind of looks like Gene Wilder in Willy Wonka.
Okay.
Like, seriously? Come on now.
Yeah, I don't... It's impossible to legislate this stuff. And the problem is, the deeper you get into your explanations, which may be valid as to why you're trying to legislate it, the worse it gets.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's sort of like... It's the opposite of a courtroom, you know, where you're trying to get to the truth. You're trying to bring as much evidence in as possible and have people listen to it. If you have to start explaining, I mean, remember what happened with Metallica and Napster.
That's what I was going to say. This is Lars Ulrich-like.
And Lars was making a lot of sense, but the more he talked, the worse it got. The more he said, the more arguments he brought up, the more people were like, you know what? Fuck you. I'm going to pirate your music. You know, I know people that weren't even interested in Metallica who were like downloading whole albums worth, you know, Ride the Lightning. Yeah, love that record.
But Prince has a reputation because there's kids on Instagram who will post, you know, 15 seconds of a Prince song and it'll get yanked and they'll say, are you serious?
Right, right.
Like, is this going to damage your legacy? Is this taking money out of your pocket?
Yeah, I mean... Maybe for him, it's probably just perversity, but maybe it's an aesthetic thing. Like, he sort of feels like, look, it's my music, I'm in control of it, and I don't want anybody doing, like, goofy faces to 1999, you know? that could be, but you see, one of the things that happens is when you get to a certain point, you do have to kind of abdicate responsibility. I mean, you can't do this, like, I'm going to button everything up and sew it all down and you know, I'm going to control everything, because you can't. And the more you try, the more ridiculous you look. So I think unfortunately he looks kind of ridiculous here.
Yeah. Now, curiously, he recently tweeted out a YouTube link of a performance from Tamar Davis on The Voice. So he's not against YouTube. He just doesn't want fan-made videos featuring his music on YouTube.
Okay.
Oh, well. It's been officially announced that the fifth installment of MCA Day will take place on Saturday, August 20th at Littlefield Art Space in Brooklyn. If you don't know, it is a nonprofit, no money exchange event honoring the late, great Adam Yauch. Last year, there were live performances from DMC and DJ Hurricane. And I got to host MCA Day. And if Mike Carney, the organizer, is listening... Throw me another bone this year. I want to host it again.
Mike.
Yeah, yeah. Now, did you know that Adam Yauch was a huge fan of Minor Threat?
Yes, I did know. And I will tell you a funny, funny story about that, which is, well, I think it's funny. When we were, it probably was 1983. Now, the Beastie Boys at that point had released like Ed Raid on Mojos, right? So mm-hmm. they were still sort of a punk band.
Mm-hmm.
We came and we were playing this club in the Bowery called Great Gildersleeves. And there was this little kid who just was badgering me for, you know, hours. Like, oh, I want my band, the Beastie Boys. We want to play with you guys. Can you? And you know, and I just kept saying to him, like, dude, I don't have any control in New York as to who plays with us. I mean, we're not touring with anybody. It's the lineup is whatever they decide the lineup's going to be. Well, yeah, but you know, and it just went on and on and on. And you know, I said, look, you seem like a nice guy. I've heard Egg Raid on Mojo. I think it's great, but there's really nothing I can do. And then lo and behold, boom. You know, the next time I heard him was License to Ill, and I was like, whoa. Now I'd be begging him, hey, I'm in this band called Minor Threat. Think we could go on? You know, so but yeah,
so
they
was,
actually
that
they
was
covered,
Adam Yauch.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. I don't think it was Adam. I think it was one of the other two dudes. But
okay, because the voice kind of sounded like Mike D. That would be a good 18-year-old Mike D voice.
It could have been Mike D. I don't know. And of course, no one's going to cop to this at this point. But the only other thing was that they did actually record one of our songs live.
Yeah. Scream at a Wall.
Right, and it was on a home video, I think, or a video.
Yes, Sabotage.
And we had enormous problems getting paid, which wasn't directly their fault, because obviously they weren't sitting around with the books, like, figuring out whose checks got to be cut. But it became sort of an issue, and it kind of became an issue because I think their response was like, well, talk to our manager. Like, well, yeah, dude, why don't you talk to your manager and tell him to pay us?
Well, they were notorious for doing things like that.
Yeah.
Shooting in places without permits, dropping in beats that weren't there, so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I mean,
they have a great legacy of that.
It goes back to the original sampling issue, which was the Led Zeppelin sample. But, I don't bear them any ill will or anything like that, but there was a certain amount of, like, business that went on around them that was always a little bit, I don't know.
I'm trying to start a super band for MCA Day. Would you have any interest in being in that super band?
It's like, I'm thinking about raising an army, and you'd be my first recruit.
Well, yeah. you don't have to answer now, but think about it.
I will. I'll think about it.
That's me, yeah, planting the seed. So okay. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, Lyle and I will take a trip back to the glorious 1990s.
Main thing about doing stunt work is safety first. I learned that from Burt Reynolds himself, because if you're not going to be safe, if you're not going to be careful of the people around, the people who are in the vicinity watching you do a manly stunt, then you might hurt somebody.
We are back, Jim Shear and Lyle Presler, who, oh, by the way, is an Instagram sensation over Easter weekend, over 1,500 likes on Glennie Friedman's Instagram account. A beautiful picture of you in black and white playing guitar on stage for Minor Threat.
Yeah, I actually saw it. Now, Glenn's claim is that the picture was, he's never published the picture. And
I've seen it before.
I think I've seen it before. I'm pretty sure, yeah. I've seen it before, or maybe I've seen a similar one. Just, you know, full disclosure here. You know, I would love to have... Glenn, I would love to have some really nice gelatin prints or something of some of these pictures, you know, considering I have none. But, you know, Glenn, as we've discussed before, Glenn is a very serious businessman. And rightly so. And he guards his stuff, his product, his art. And, you know, again, as well he should. But it was a little bit of a surprise because I never would have seen it. Except that somebody actually emailed my wife and said, have you seen this?
Oh, I wish... See, I was going to be on it first, but I just got too busy with Easter.
Yeah,
because I flipped on my Instagram,
funny.
And I was like, whoa!
But believe it or not,
Lyle.
Though... Believe it or not, we decided... I think it was Saturday night. Yeah, we decided we're going to go to Staten Island for dinner. Now, for those of you who don't know New York... Staten Island, not a place that most people think about going to unless
no,
they live there.
But they got good Italian and good pizza there.
And they had we found this down and dirty seafood place that was really good. But mm-hmm. So it was on the way. It was actually on the way. I was driving, and you know when someone in the passenger seat tries to show you something,
oh, yeah.
on a tiny little screen, like, hey, yeah. look, and you're like, do you want to be dead? Because that's what we're going to be. We're going to yeah. be dead with an Instagram picture
yes.
of me. From when I was 22 years old or 20 years old or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a nice picture. I mean, Glenn is a superb photographer, especially, you know, in live situations. He's one of the best that's ever done it, without question.
And I don't know if Glenn would admit this, but we did a Beastie Boys podcast not long ago. Mm. He wasn't on Instagram. I questioned him why he wasn't. I said, would you ever join Instagram? He said, maybe. And shortly after, he joined Instagram.
Well,
so
you know,
I would like to think my footnote to the world
I
nudged Glennie Friedman to be on Instagram.
Well, and I think for him, it's great. I mean, to be able to put up a picture that maybe people haven't seen before or they haven't looked at in a long time. I think that
mm-hmm.
for what he does, I think Instagram is fantastic.
Yes. And back to your needs, Lyle.
Yeah.
You said you wanted good prints of those pictures.
Yes.
You know what Glenn would say to you?
Yeah.
Lyle.
75
you
bucks
gotta,
a piece.
You got to get my book, My Rules.
Oh,
the
I have all
book
the books.
I put out.
And I bought all the books. I didn't get anything for free. I don't believe I got anything for free. I think I have them all, or most of them. And they're wonderful books. If you haven't checked any of those books out, you really should, because
mm-hmm.
they really are terrific. And they embrace not just punk rock, but they get into all sorts of great
yep.
stuff, including his iconic skateboarding photos,
mm-hmm.
which are really, really amazing and have been essentially ripped off for years.
Yes.
But the weird thing was is that all of a sudden, you know, there was a hashtag Lyle Presler in there, I think. And my wife Sandy was about to click on it. I said, do not do that. Do not. Because I said, for all, she goes, but there's like a lot of likes. And I said, yeah, well, there's going to be a couple dislikes or a couple things. I mean, you have to learn never to read or allow anyone that you care about to read your press.
Mm-hmm.
Because people tend to say some pretty horrible things, which may or may not be true, by the way. I mean, there may be some truth to some of it. But, you know, I just said, and we got into a little bit of a, you know, kind of a thing. And I was like, look, I'm just trying to protect you. I'm not trying to protect me.
Yeah.
I'm trying to protect you because you're going to get angry. And then you're going to want to show me what you're angry about. And I don't want to see it.
Yeah. And then it's going to ruin our dinner in Staten Island.
Exactly.
Someone suggested that you were finger tapping in that picture.
No.
Were you indeed finger tapping?
No. I didn't do anything like that. Okay. I wasn't good enough to do that.
All right. So right now we're going to take a trip back to the 1990s. All of these current stories, but they happen to have a 90s slant. Salt and Peppa and Vanilla Ice will headline the I Love the 90s tour. Also on the bill, Coolio, Tone Loke, All for One, and Biz Markie. The summer leg of the I Love the 90s tour kicks off this Friday.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Will you be attending, Lyle?
I probably won't, but I could certainly see why people would go to that.
Okay. So if you like your 1990s with more alternative flavor, Pearl Jam's tour kicks off on April 8th. So there you go. Maybe some people will attend both.
They may. It depends on how their taste ran, you know?
More 90s news. On Saturday Night in Los Angeles, Smashing Pumpkins' Billy Corgan played with estranged bandmate James Iha for the first time in 16 years. They were also joined by drummer Jimmy Chamberlain, which means they were just one Darcy shy of their heyday lineup. And I should point out that it's not like James Iha was bored and was like, whatever. It was actually his 48th birthday, so he didn't need to be there.
Well, I have to say that I met James a few times, and I always really liked him. I really liked him. I mean, he was first of all, he was so cool. Like, I mean, he had the greatest look, and he was really, really cool. And he used to, he occasionally would actually drop by our offices at Caroline Records, even though they weren't on the label anymore, even though they'd gone on to Virgin and become huge stars, and he would drop by. And there was actually one really funny thing that happened. We had a warehouse of, you know, of records right there on the premises. And it was a constant problem because people would steal stuff because we didn't just carry our own records. We carried, you know, all the cool labels like Sub Pop and Matador, and we carried, we one-stopped for major labels, and we got a lot of like limited edition stuff and everything. So one day James comes in, and he was particularly friendly with this guy who was our retail marketing person. And this guy took James back in the, you know, back in the back of the warehouse, and James said, "Can I pull a few things?" And guy said, "Sure." Well, James pulled like $1,000 wholesale value of stuff and put it into a box and came out with it. And our boss saw it and he said to the guy, he's like, "You got to tell James to put all that stuff back." Now, how are you going to do that exactly? You know, James, I know you made this company tons and tons and tons of money, and I know you're a big superstar, but you got to just, you got to put that interview disc box set back. I don't think he had to. I think in the end he walked with it, and but there was a policy thereafter, like nobody's allowed back there ever, because it was like for a music person, it was a candy store, man.
Right.
I mean, it was unbelievable.
From there on in, it was called the James Iha policy.
James Iha Memorial Warehouse.
He was a record label rep for a while.
That's right.
And I met James Iha. I've met Billy Corgan, and I never thought that they would ever get back together.
Yeah.
Just because there was so much damage done to James Iha. Because throughout the years, it was like, well, you didn't do anything. It was all Billy Corgan. And throughout the years, they just reduced him to a little crumb.
I know. And I always thought that whole thing was unfair. I mean, look, I don't think it's going to come as a great surprise that on most of what you hear from Smashing Pumpkins, it's basically Billy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he would basically tell the other people, you don't need to show up. And he would record, you know, the bass parts and the other guitar parts, and then Butch Vig would play a lot of drums too. That's nothing. I mean, that's not like a dirty little secret. That's pretty well known. And I think James, you know, felt very marginalized in that process. But I mean, on the other hand, he was able to be in a gigantic band, and now he has the relative leisure of having made a lot of money and whatever. So, I mean, I'm not going to cry for him, but it was not fair, really.
Does Darcy come back ever, do you think?
I don't know about that. I don't even know what Darcy's doing. I mean,
because I think the Smashing Pumpkins are eligible to be nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right.
Billy Corgan says they deserve to get in because they were one of the prime bands of their era. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
So maybe if it doesn't happen before then, we get the Heyday lineup together at the induction ceremony.
That would be
for when that ever happens. Yeah.
That would be very interesting.
So Blink 182 are working on a new album. We should have a new single soon. But it's the first studio album without Tom DeLonge. He has been replaced by Alkaline Trio's Matt Skiba. And over the last decade, Tom really hasn't been on the same page as Mark and Travis, apparently wanting Blink's music to follow in the footsteps of Coldplay and U2.
Okay.
I don't know
Sounds
how familiar you are with Blink or Alkaline Trio. See, to me, we've had this conversation many times. Do you replace one of your front men? If you do, do you do it with an unknown or someone who's established in the scene? When I found out that Matt Skiba was going to be the co-front man, I kind of liked it.
Yeah.
Because I thought Tom's off on another plane right now. He's doing Angels and Airwaves, and he wants to play soccer stadiums in Qatar. But yeah, Matt Skiba respects Blink 182. He comes from that scene. He's well respected in the scene. And I know he takes it as a big challenge and a big honor.
Well, listen, I mean, I don't have any problem with it at all. I think that, I mean, listen, you have to ask yourself, everybody in a band has to ask themselves, do I want to keep doing this? And if I do want to keep doing it and it's not going to be with my friend and my bandmate, do I want to replace that person? And then, you know, then you're right. Then is it, do we get an unknown? Do we get a person who brings with them something that the people in the scene know about? It's always a tough thing. And it's so individual. It's easy for, you know, someone to sit at a distance and say, well, they shouldn't have done this or they should have done that. But, you know, I never was really a big fan of Blink-182's. It always seemed, I dare say, kind of sophomoric to me.
And that's why it's crazy all of this has happened.
Right.
I never thought Tom DeLonge would be like, man, I want to play stadiums.
Yeah, that seems odd. I would have thought that he probably would have been fairly content doing what he was doing, since there's no question about how successful it was. But, you know, again, it's individual decisions. It's people have different ideas. People have their own internal issues. I mean, it's like when people ask, why did this band break up? Or why did your band break up? Or what, you know, it's like, how long do you got? You know, how many hours do you want to spend talking about this? Because we can go on and on. And by the way, it would just be my perspective. It wouldn't be anybody else's perspective.
And in fairness, during their first breakup, and then they got back together, I talked to all the guys multiple times, and I really wanted someone to be nuts so I could point the finger at Tom or point the finger at Mark or Travis, and none of them were nuts.
Right, right.
So I'm sure there was just some creative thing that they couldn't work out, and that's why Blink is forced. Well, not forced, but it's fun to play those songs, and I'm sure they still want to play those songs, so that's why they got Matt Skiba.
Absolutely.
So Snoop D-O-double-G is headed to the WWE Hall of Fame.
Why?
WrestleMania is happening in Dallas, Texas this weekend. Every year on the eve of the big show, they have their Hall of Fame ceremony, and there's always a celebrity inductee, a celebrity that has worked closely with the WWE. This year, it will be Snoop Dogg.
Okay.
Are you into professional wrestling at all, Lyle? Have you ever been?
No.
Oh, man.
Yeah. No. I think that's one of those things you it either works for you or it doesn't. And I can appreciate why people like it. I can appreciate the theater of it. But I can't.
So,
I can't do monster truck pulls. I can't do wrestling.
No.
I can't do, you know, I can't. I can't. But I also, but at the same time, like, I want to make it clear, like, I'm also not an MMA guy either. Like, I'm not,
okay,
you know, about as far as I go is to watch, you know, well, you know, about as far as I go is to watch, you know, Ali Frazier. But, like, that's as far as I go with any of that kind of stuff. And
if you gave me a weekend, I could get you into wrestling and or Monster Jam. But I don't know if you have a weekend to give me.
Yeah, I know. And it wasn't there a straight edge wrestler too?
CM Punk.
Yeah, right. CM Punk.
Who's now an MMA fighter. So
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I did hear that.
So you're probably not curious about this, but the wrestlers being inducted this year are Sting, Michael Hayes, Jimmy Garvin, Buddy Roberts, Terry Gordy, The Godfather, Big Boss Man, Stan Hansen, and Jacqueline.
Well,
so do you have any birthdays today, Lyle?
I do. It's actually a good birthday day.
Ooh, okay.
It's
as
a good
opposed
day
to last week.
Yeah, last week was pretty bad. The first one is Angus Young.
Ooh,
is 61 years old.
Okay. Wow.
Tommy Heath, better known as Tommy Two Tone, 8675309, is 68 today. And interestingly enough, the other notable in the band Tommy Two Tone was John Cowsill of the Cowsills.
Okay.
Who is married to Vicki Peterson from the Bangles.
Hmm.
Ba-dum-ba-da-dum-dum-dum. So they're all getting together to have a party, I'm sure. Johann Bach would have been 331 years old today. And our friend Jack Antonoff. From Fun and Bleachers is 32.
Okay, so he's fairly young.
Fairly.
Yeah, he's got some more years on his tires.
He does.
So the number one single on the Billboard Hot 100 this week is Work.
Really?
From Rihanna featuring Drake for a sixth straight week. The number one album on the Billboard 200, This Is What the Truth Feels Like from Gwen Stefani. The number one song on iTunes, once again, 7 years from Lucas Graham.
Do you like that song?
Yeah, it's catchy.
Yeah, my daughter just can't stop playing it.
The number one album on iTunes is Mind of Mine from Zayn. And the number one song on Spotify this week, Work from Rihanna featuring Drake. We are going to take a break, and when we come back, we have our music picks of the week.
What a wicked web we weave when first we try to deceive. And they tell the people there is no deception. But you see, there is dissension in the four horsemen. And it is at that time, the prime time, when they are most vulnerable. Because we got matches lined up. And it is ripe for the picking. It is time for the fall. And I guarantee you and promise you, very soon, Michael P.S. Hayes, gorgeous Jimmy Garvin, World Tag Team Champion. Because, baby, we got what it takes to take what you got like 4 peas in a pot. And the peas will be jumping if the water wasn't hot.
Hey everybody, Jim Shear and Lyle Presler back on this fine show that breaks down music, the headlines, well, not really gossip, all the hard news that nobody else discusses.
We're
I want to let everybody
down.
Know. Yeah, I want to let everyone know. I recently designed a T-shirt for Fall Out Boy and the Chicago Bulls, and when I was drawing the picture, I actually had no idea what it was for. The shirt is available for a limited time on teespring.com. That's teespring.com. So I found out not too long ago that a whole bunch of music artists and the NBA teamed up for a run of mashup t-shirts. So for example, there's a Roots shirt that looks like the old 76ers logo, and the Fall Out Boy shirt that I did has caricatures of the band dressed like the Bulls.
Wow.
So, and I think tomorrow, Friday, is the last day that you can get it.
Oh, wow.
So, coincidentally, the week that I did the Fall Out Boy shirt, a friend randomly contacted me to do an Andrew WK hockey shirt.
Whoa.
Which is available on his website, and the shirt is called Hockeying Counts as Partying. And so for a week, I was the man to go to if you needed a drawing of a musician playing a sport.
Yeah,
no one's contacted me since. So.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah, all right. So,
but after this, maybe so.
Yeah, maybe. So time for the music picks of the week. My pick this week is King of the World from Weezer, and they are releasing their brand new album. It's self-titled, but everyone's calling it the White Album, tomorrow. Now, they've already released a handful of videos off of the album. I don't think any of them were that good.
Yeah.
And so this song never really stuck out to me, but then I finally got all of the songs that I think there's four or five songs out right now. Finally got those on my iPod. I listened to the song independently of the video.
Okay.
And I thought, I really like this. This is just bread and butter Weezer. So I'm going to play it right now. King of the World from Weezer. King of the World from Weezer.
Like you say, it's bread and butter Weezer.
There's some lyrics in there that if another artist sang them, I'd be like, dude, you can't do that. But because it's Rivers Cuomo, he gets away with it, talking about chopsticks and Uncle Sam dropping the atom bomb. Because for those that don't know, Rivers has been fascinated with Japanese women throughout his career.
Yes.
Whether he sings about them on Buddy Holly or Pinkerton is all about his crush on a young Japanese girl. So when he, like I said, he can get away with it because it's him. But if it was anyone else, it'd say, oh, man, use another lyric. Come on, don't go there.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know if that's right or wrong. So time now for your music pick of the week.
Well, in a way, we're all 90s all the time here, right?
Ooh.
Yeah, because...
This is coincidental that we had the big 90s news block and now we're having 90s music picks?
I know. And, you know, because to me, I mean, you know, Weezer's the 90s. And if you had told me that that song had been recorded in 95 or 94, I would have not even batted an eye. I went with a live recording that was last week, Smashing Pumpkins.
We're
playing in Seattle, and they decided to do the whole song, Malibu.
Oh, my gosh.
Off of Celebrity Skin, which was really the sort of the breakthrough whole record, I guess.
This is a 90s explosion.
I know.
Smashing Pumpkins, Seattle, whole? Yeah, are you kidding me?
And I think, and first of all, I mean, everybody knows that Billy wrote that song. Because he's credited. But what is funny, if you listen to his introduction, he seems to be suggesting that, you know, hey, I pretty much wrote the whole thing. He sort of says, you know, I wrote part of that, some of it. Who knows how much I wrote? And he kind of shrugs his shoulders knowingly. But
you're going to play the banter too then?
Yeah, play the banter. Absolutely. Okay. Let's play that.
All right, here we go. Malibu from the Smashing Pumpkins.
That was a long time ago that I helped write this song. Now, how much of this song I wrote? It was a collaboration. I actually texted our dear Courtney today. She's in Mumbai. I don't know why she's in Mumbai. There's no beach in, or there isn't a fake beach in Mumbai, right? Is there? Don't they have a fake beach? Does Mumbai have a fake beach? You've been to Mumbai? It's my worthless friend. So we're going to play this song now by Hole called Malibu, featuring Miss Katie Cole.
And that's Katie Cole, who's in the band, who's actually doing Courtney's vocal. I just always thought it was a great song. And I mean, I would never have signed up as a real Hole fan, although I did have a lot of dealings with Courtney. But I always thought it was a great song. And, you know, it's nice to see Billy playing the song because, I mean, it is probably almost entirely his song. Not that Courtney did a bad job with it at all or anything like that, but it's kind of, you know, it's a bit of a flashback, but
yeah,
it's fun to hear.
The information age we live in now is crazy because I remember in the 90s when we didn't have every piece of information at our fingertips, people would go around and they say, I think Billy Corgan worked on this song. Like,
yeah.
I think and now it's like, yeah, he wrote the song and he might have written the entire album.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's nice to hear him play that song, a song that he wrote. So we are going to take one more break. And when we come back, we will play my favorite game, Ask Lyle.
You know, you kind of remind me of that gal hitchhiking on the Smashing Pumpkins video. You know, the gal in the dress, the cute gal.
You know, like the ding dong dong dong. You know, as a taxi driver, it's a pain in the ass. You're coming down the road, these guys pick up the middle, they park, you got 60 kids looking for a sucker pop or something, you know. Hey! You know, I got a cab, I got a fare here. You know, but the kids want their ice cream. You let them have their ice cream.
Hey, everybody. We are back. Jim Shear and Lyle Presler. And time to play. You know what? Before we play the game, quick shout out to Patty Duke, who passed away
yes,
at Patty the Duke. Age of 69. I think I knew this when I was younger because I was a Nick at Night junkie. But I had forgotten that Sean Astin was her son.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And so you have Patty Duke Aston. That's right.
Yeah, who plays in Rudy and Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings, yeah.
He was in another movie recently, which was really good.
Potatoes, Mr. Frodo.
And he was in Goonies, too, but there was one more recent where he was in. I'm like, yeah, you go, Sean. So RIP to
Sean,
Patty
Sean
Duke.
Sean, also of a fairly conservative Republican bent, I think, too.
Oh, I did not know that.
I think Sean's like been on like Bill Maher and stuff. And
okay.
You know, and has a right-wing approach to some extent.
Okay. Did you ever watch Patty Duke?
You know, I never did. I mean, I'm fully aware of it, and I'm aware of like all the problems that she had. She had a lot of problems, and she was sort of, in some ways, well, I guess Shirley Temple was the original, but she was like, you know, that sort of child star that kind of is a little bit of a poster child for what happens to some child stars.
So now it is time to play Ask Lyle.
Ask Lyle.
I ask Lyle three questions. He gives me three answers.
And I win nothing.
You win nothing. And I want to let everyone know that I do not prep Lyle. These questions I throw at him, and he gives answers off the dome. And I think the answers are always great. So I want to let people know that you're kind of like freestyling right now.
We're freestyling.
Yeah, and if you could rhyme, you would be an awesome freestyle rhymer.
Well, if I could
do that.
Maybe
you are.
But if I could do that, then I wouldn't be here with you, Jim.
Okay. The rap world's loss is my gain. So you were in a group called the Meat Men.
Right.
Which started out as a punky band and kind of morphed into a more medley type of band.
Mm-hmm.
So my question for you is, what Meat Men albums did you play on?
I played on War of the Superbikes. I played on Rock and Roll Juggernaut.
Okay.
And I played on the live record, We're the Meat Men and You Still Suck, live.
Okay.
And then I played on an EP, the Dutch Hercules EP, which was before all of those.
Now, the Meat Men, aren't they still performing?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, they are a perennial, as we say. The Meat Men...
Have you ever been asked back?
No. No. Okay. The Meat Men started in Michigan. And what happened was their singer, Tesco V, moved to D.C. He was a teacher. He was a third grade, I believe, teacher in Michigan. He got laid off. They had a real downturn in their public education system. And he moved to D.C. And he was running a magazine called Touch and Go Magazine. And he didn't have any money to continue putting it out. So a bunch of us said, hey, why don't we do a benefit show at the 930 Club. So a few of us from various different bands got up there and performed Meat Men songs with them. And we had such a good time, we just said, you know what? Do you want to do some of this? Do you want to just do some of this stuff? And it became like a hobby band. I mean, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't an all, we all had jobs and we all did other things. But it was fun, and we would try to just come up with the wackiest and stupidest things we could think of and then actually record them. And it's funny, when I first went to the theater and saw This Is Spinal Tap, I walked out going, we've been doing this for a year. We've been doing this, man. I mean, we've been doing every stupid thing that, you know, of course they did it better. But so that was the Meat Men. And it's funny, some people took it really seriously, which I could never understand. I mean, it was so obviously a joke. And people actually said to me things like, oh, you're ruining your legacy. I was like, oh, please, come on. I can ruin that in one night out on the town. I don't need a whole tour for that.
My next question is, would you ever get nervous, and I'm talking about present day, meeting one of your musical superheroes? So say if me and you are out, and we go to a club, and poof, one of your favorite musicians is there. Would you get nervous to meet them?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, nervous? No, I mean, I think you might have a few butterflies.
Butterflies, okay.
Walking up to the person. I remember meeting James Hetfield of Metallica. And, you know, if you don't know, James is a big guy. Like, he's physically large, and I, you know, I was introduced to him, and he looked at me, and he said, you still play? That was the first thing he said to me. And you know, and so yeah, I could probably be a little bit intimidated, but I have learned one thing over the years, which is that you got to be really careful meeting your idols, because it rarely works out well.
Mm-hmm.
It just first of all, like, if they don't know who you are, like, and when I say who you are, I mean if they don't have a context for you,
mm-hmm.
then it's really, it can be, because you'd get treated like any other person would cost them.
Yep.
You know, if they tend to know a little bit about you, it might be a little different. There might be some sort of, I don't know, mutual respect thing going on, mm-hmm. which certainly was partially, at least partially, the case with James. But I would get nervous, sure. But I think in general, I try not to meet people unless there's a good reason for me to meet them.
Okay.
You know, like, now, if somebody says, you know, hey, I really need to introduce you to so-and-so because she knows you and you know her, and you know what I'm saying? Then
yeah,
I'll do it.
There's context there.
Yeah, if there's no context, I think it's very difficult.
Now, who would be on the top of your list right now?
Ooh, the top of my list right now.
Or someone that you would say, hey, yeah, that's really cool that I got to meet them.
I think one of the two remaining Beatles.
Okay.
Just to say that you did.
Have you ever met a Beatle?
No, I haven't. Sandy actually rode down in the elevator with Ringo Starr one time.
Ooh, okay.
And she even said, like, I was just shaking, you know, and it's Ringo. I mean, it's not like, I mean, no offense, but it's, you know, it's not like, it's not John, you know what I mean? But I think that, yeah, I think anybody, like, I mean, obviously if Elvis were still around, you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, but yeah. I would probably be kind of, like, dialed in to meet Merle Haggard. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
there's anybody who's been doing that thing for that long and done it, you know, and suffered all the slings and arrows of the whole thing. I think those are kind of interesting people. But then again, you know, what is, you meet them? Do you have a conversation with them? Do you ask them questions? I mean, you know, there's a lot of variables there.
Right. Right.
I mean, just to shake somebody's hand. I mean, I shook Bill Clinton's hand, but I didn't have a conversation with him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So my final question, this is the sports one. We are gearing up for a huge sports weekend. There is the Final Four, opening day in Major League Baseball, the Masters, and WrestleMania 32. So out of those four, if you had to, which one would you watch?
The Final Four.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the golf thing, I can't. There's just too much. I mean, listen, I appreciate the skill involved, but to me, it's just a bunch of horseshit. I can't. I don't like Jim Nance. I don't like the whole presentation of it. I don't like the sort of, you know, here we are at a very exclusive club that none of you can really get into. You know, it's just, to me, it's just, it goes, it's too elitist for me. It's just too much. And I know people play it and love it, and I think that's great. And, you know, it's like playing pool on a giant table. And it's very, I tried playing one time. It's extremely difficult. I have great respect for the people who can do it, but I can't do that. WrestleMania, we've already talked about. Opening day baseball. I mean, I think opening day baseball has some good things associated with it, but I think the problem is it's like a very much a team-to-team thing. I mean, if you're a big fan of a team and you're gonna spend the whole year, you know, going, you know, being a fan, then I think it's really exciting. I think if you're not, it's sort of like, all right, let's see who gets hurt, you know?
Yeah. Okay, so you're not coming over to watch WrestleMania on pay-per-view on Sunday.
Yeah, how much do you got to pay for pay-per-view for WrestleMania?
I want to say it's almost like $80 now.
Well, I mean, but you see, I mean, if you get a bunch of people together, then that's nothing. And that's the way you want to watch it anyway, right? I mean, you don't want to watch it.
Not too many people.
Well, but what I mean is you want to at least have somebody there where you can make snide comments to.
Yes, absolutely.
It's sort of like, you know, the Seinfeld thing. I'm not going to go see Plan 9 from Outer Space alone, because who am I going to make snide comments to? You know.
All right. So maybe for WrestleMania 33, when I can work on you for a year.
Okay.
Yeah, but have a good weekend. Regardless.
You too.
So for Lyle Pressler, my name is Jim Shear, and we will see yens later.
So long, farewell, I'll be the same tonight.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has just left the building.